I Believe by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, read for you by Blue Friend in beautiful BC. Chapter 8. The old house was still as an old house ever can be. Occasionally, in the darkness of the night, there came a mutter from an aged floorboard as it rubbed against its neighbor and apologized for the intrusion into its privacy. The old house was at rest after a trying day. No longer was it possible for it to slumber its life away through a warm noontide. The old house had fallen upon evil times. Taxation, demands, expenses for expensive restorations. The old house was unhappy at the throngs of mindless visitors who came surging through the corridors, flocking through the rooms like a herd of demented sheep. The old house felt its floorboards groan and its timbers sag slightly under the unaccustomed load after so many years of quietude. But the family had to go on and had to raise the money somehow, so after much soul-searching and much internal strife, parties had been taken to tour the historic mansion. Hundreds of years ago, the house had been built as a manor for a man of high class, a man who had served his king nobly and well, and had been elevated to the peerage for his devotion. The house had been built lovingly and well by sturdy workmen who lived upon ale and cheese and hunks of bread, and who did everything properly for the pride of doing a proper job. So the house survived the baking heat of summers and the chilling draughts of winter, when every timber wanted to shrink away in the icy blasts which swept around it. Now the gardens were still well kept, the main fabric of the house was still well secured, but some of the boards began to creak, some of the archways had the sag of old age, and now, after a day of being trodden on and littered by the sticky papers of careless children, the old house had reverted again to quietude. The old house was still as an old house could ever be. Behind the wainscot, little mice squeaked and scampered in their play. Somewhere, high above, an owl hooted at the moon. Outside, the chill night wind rustled among the eaves and occasionally tapped a long branch of a tree against the windows. But no one lived in that wing. The family lived now in a smaller house in the grounds, a house where in more prosperous times the head butler and his wife had had their domain. The highly polished floors shone in the moonlight, making weird reflections against the paneled walls, in the sightless eyes as they had peered down through the centuries. At the far end of the great hall, the stately grandfather clock chimed the 11:45. Somewhere, on a sideboard, cut glasses tinkled gently as in echo they whispered the chimes to each other. From another room, not so far away, there came the higher tones of a grandfather clock repeating the 11:45. All was still for a moment, and then the grandfather said, "Grandfather Clock, are you there? Can you hear me?" There was a click and a whir as a cog slipped, and then came the high voice of the grandfather clock. "Yes, grandfather, of course, I can hear you. Do you have anything to tell me this night?" The grandfather clock carried on, its muted voice. Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. And then, raising his voice, he spoke. Granddaughter, I was born at the end of the 17th century. My long case was polished first in 1675, and since my pendulum was first set swinging, I have pondered on the mystery of life. Long have I lived, long have I pondered. The humans around us have such a short span of life. They have no time to think, really, of all there is to know about life. Are you interested, granddaughter? The granddaughter clock, sitting in state in a lady's retiring room, nodded her head slightly to the tremor of a passing heavy locomotive and its attendant trail of freight cars, and then she said gently, "Of course, Grandfather Clock, of course I'm interested in hearing of that which you have thought so long throughout the centuries. Tell me, and I will listen, and I will not interrupt until such time as my purpose makes it necessary for me to call the hours. Speak, Grandfather Clock, knowing that I am listening." The grandfather clock muttered in his throat. His long case was magnificent, more than 7 feet tall. He loomed in the semi-darkness above the highly polished floor. No finger marks marred his case, for a special footman had the task of keeping these wonderful antiques in good health, clean, and of strong voice. Grandfather Clock had his face to the moonlight. Looking out of the window beside him, he could gaze over spacious parklands with age-old trees spaced like rows of soldiers on parade. Around the trees were the close-cropped lawns, and here and there bushes and rhododendrons and many bushes brought from far, far lands. Beyond the bushes, although Grandfather Clock had never seen so far, there were pleasant meadows where the horses and the cows of the estate cropped the sweet grass and, like the old house, dreamed their life away. Closer, just out of sight of Grandfather Clock, there was, he had been told, a very, very pleasant pond. About 30 feet across it was, so a traveling clock had told him. The surface had many broad lily pads on it, which at the right time of the year, fat frogs sat and croaked. Grandfather Clock had indeed heard their croaking, and thought maybe their mechanism needed oiling. But the traveling clock had explained it all to him, had explained, too, about the fish in the pond, and abutting the far end of the pond, there had been a large enclosed aviary, some 30 feet long and about 10 feet high, in which multicolored birds led their life. Grandfather Clock mused upon all this. He looked back along the centuries, seeing the lords and the ladies coming towards him in their gorgeous garb, so differently from the drab denims with which humans seem to be uniformly clad during these decadent days. Grandfather Clock pondered until he was aroused from his reverie by, "Grandfather Clock! Grandfather Clock, are you well? I am waiting to hear from you, Grandfather Clock. You were going to tell me many things of the past, of the present, of the future, and of life, and of the meaning thereof." Grandfather Clock cleared his throat, and his pendulum went tick-tock, 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 and then he spoke. "Granddaughter Clock," he said, Humans do not realize that the swinging pendulum is the answer to the riddle of the universe. I am an old clock, and I've stood here for so many years that the base of my case is becoming warped, and my joints creak with the change of the weather. But I want to say this to you. We, the clocks of ancient England, know the riddle of the universe, the secret of life, and the secrets beyond. The tale which he told to the granddaughter clock was a new tale, a tale which had been in the making for centuries, a tale which started far, far beyond living memory. He said that he had to blend modern technology with ancient science because the modern technology is, as yet, ancient science. The trees told me, he said, that many, many thousands of years ago there was another science, another civilization, and all that which is now considered to be modern, and modern inventions and developments, were even then obsolete. He stopped a moment and then said, "Oh, I must strike the hour, the time has come." So he stood firm and tall in the great hall, and from his long case there came the preliminary click and the whirring and the chimes, and then struck the hour of midnight, the hour of 12, when a day dies and a day is born, when yet another cycle starts. And as he finished the last stroke of 12, and his hammer stopped and quivered, he waited patiently for granddaughter clock to repeat her message to all who listened in the stillness of the night. Granddaughter clock was tall and slender, not more than about 100 years of age. She had a very pleasant voice and a remarkably clear chime, free of unwholesome vibrations, free of clatters and clicks. But, of course, that is as one would expect from a young person who had endured not much more than 100 years. Now she stood with beams of moonlight partly filtered by the waving branches outside, making their way through the tall window, and flickering fingers of light over her case, embellishing the ornaments on her pinnacles, and, at times, touching the hands which stood together, upright, like hands of a person in prayer, praying for help during the newborn day. She gave a little cough, and then her wheels started to revolve. The hammers raised and fell upon the rods. She hammered out the notes of her song. That completed, the strike of the hours came. 1, 2, 3, and all the way up to 12. At the final 12th stroke, she quivered slightly with all the effort she had expended. Her hammers shivered, and the weights at the end of her chains rumbled a bit as they sought a fresh footing in the case. She said meekly, "I'm sorry, Grandfather, I'm sorry I've kept you waiting. I'm a minute late, I know, but soon that will be put right. Will you continue?" Grandfather Clock smiled to himself. It was right, he thought, that young people should pay respect and should show deference to those who are so much older. He smiled and said, "Yes, Granddaughter Clock, I will continue." "Throughout the ages," said Grandfather Clock, "humans have sought religion to console them in the hardship of their unnatural life. They have always sought a God to be as a personal father, looking after them, watching over them, looking at them only, and giving them preferential treatment over all other humans. There always has to be a God, he said. Someone who is omnipotent, someone who can be prayed to, and from whom one hopes to obtain a favorable answer to the prayer. Granddaughter Clock nodded her agreement, nodded in sympathy with passing distant heavy traffic, and somewhere a clumsy mouse bumped into an ornament and sent it skittering upon the table. With a squeak of terror, the mouse jumped off the table and raced for the nearest hole, diving down with tail waving frantically in the air. Grandfather Clock resumed his story. We must also bring into consideration, he said, modern technology, which, of course, is merely a recrudescence of old technology. Everything that exists, everything that is just a series of vibrations. A vibration is a wave which first goes up and then goes down, goes up again and down again throughout eternity, just as our pendulums keep swinging first to one side, where it stops for a fraction of a second, and then swings down to the other side. Grandfather Clock was silent for a moment. Then he chuckled to himself as the chain moved down one tooth over the brass wheel inside, and the weight at the bottom gave a little jiggle of joy at being one tooth further down towards the ground. I know, he said, that all things that exist have their positive and their negative phases, first to one side and then to the other. I know, he said, with increasing solemnity, that at one period of time, when the pendulum of life is to one side of its swing, the God in charge is the God of good. But the God of good, in such a position, gets lulled into complacency, and he doesn't pay enough attention to what is going on around him, and the pendulum of life, which has stopped for its change of swing, starts again and swings down. The God of good is lulled into a sense that all is well, but the pendulum goes down and starts up to the other side of its swing, and there the God of ill, whom the humans call Satan, is waiting with avidity the swing of power which is now his turn. Evil is such a strong force, said Grandfather Clock. It's such a very, very strong force. Good will not believe the bad which evil is, so good doesn't fight hard enough, doesn't struggle hard enough, and so we have the bad force that we call Satan making the most of its opportunity. The pendulum of life swings up, and at the end of its swing, as with the end of all swings of all pendulums, it stops for the fraction of a second before starting down again, and the God of evil does his greatest evil during that time. And then, when the pendulum starts down again, gradually he loses power, and as the pendulum goes up again towards good, then good takes the throne once more. Oh, Grandfather Clock, said a small voice from the shadows, and, like a shadow itself, a black and white cat eased out from the blackness and sat in a moonbeam, gazing up at the old, old clock. Moving forward, the cat reached up and with soft paws rubbed at the bottom of the case. Grandfather Clock, said the cat, I could climb up your case and sit on your head, but I like you so much, I would not be disrespectful. Tell us some more." The cat moved back to the moonbeam and sat facing the clock, but not to waste any time, she decided to wash her face and her ears. From time to time, she looked up at the old clock, who, gazing down fondly at the cat, said, "Wait, little cat, I am a clock, and my time is circumscribed. I have to wait now and chime the quarter, so that all humans who are conscious may know that we are 15 minutes into the newborn day. Little cat, hear me, and then a minute later, hear my granddaughter. We will tell the time, and then we will talk again." On the still night air, the chimes of 15 minutes past the hour rang out. Outside the window, a stealthy poacher, who was moving silently to try to steal eggs from the nearby hen roost, froze in his tracks for a moment, and then smiled complacently as he moved on towards the window where Granddaughter Clock was ready. As the shadow of the poacher crossed her window, she, with much higher voice, chimed the minutes. Once again the poacher stopped, and then, with hands shielding his face from the sidelight, he tried to peer into the room. "Bloomin' clocks," he said, "'nough to scare the livin' daylights out of any good thief." So saying, he moved on past the window and into the shadows, and some minutes after there came the sleepy murmur and protest of disturbed hens. There was silence in the house, as much silence as there could be in such an old house. Boards creaked, stairs whispered their complaint at having to remain in such a position so long. Throughout the house, there was the vague scurry of tiny feet, and of course, the ever-present tickety, 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 and tuck. Or the bigger tick-tock, tick-tock of the grandfather clock. All these were the normal sounds of a living house. The night wore on. Outside, the moon went on her way, leaving dark shadows around the house. Night creatures came out and went about their lawful occasion. Small foxes ventured out of their dens and took an early look at night life upon earth. Night wore on. With the night civilization of nocturnal creatures going about their allotted path. Stealthy cats stalked their prey, and often there was a sudden spring and a muted curse in Felinese, as the unlucky cat missed. At last, the eastern sky showed a lightening of the shadows, and then faint streaks of red appeared as the probing fingers of the sun felt out the way ahead, lighting up the tops of distant hills and even exaggerating the darkness in the valleys beneath. Then, nearby, a rooster crowed raucously at the first sign that there would be another day. For a shocked moment, all nature stood still. And then there was a sudden rustle and scurry as the creatures of the night accepted their warning that the dawn was about to break, accepted and hastened off to their homes in various parts of the undergrowth. Night birds found their perches in dark corners, bats returned to steeples, and the creatures of the day started that uneasy stirring which preceded the full awakening. In the great hall, Grandfather Clock went tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. He was not talking now. This was the wrong time of day to talk. There might be humans about, and clocks did not reveal their secret thoughts to unheeding, unbelieving humans. In the past, Grandfather Clock had commented about humans, saying, "Oh, humans always want proof of everything. They even want proof that they are humans. But how can you prove a thing?" asked Grandfather Clock, and then he continued, "If a thing is true, it needs no proof, because it is self-evident that the thing is there. But if a thing is not true, and if it is not there, then no amount of proof will prove that it is there. So there's no point in trying to prove anything." The light became brighter. The day became older. Soon there was much activity about the house. Cleaning women came and with mechanical devices brought uproar to the quiet old mansion. There was the clatter of dishes and the hum of voices from the servants' quarters below the main floor. Then well-known footsteps came along the hall. A footman. "Good morning, Grandfather Clock," he said. "I'm going to give you your daily rub and wipe your face for you." The footman went to the old clock and carefully cleaned the glass and checked the time. Then he opened the front of the long case and gently raised the weights one by one. He pulled on the chains so that the clock should be wound without placing undue strain upon the antique teeth. Closing the clock case, he patted it lovingly and then set to work to polish an already highly polished surface. "Well, Grandfather," he said, "you're all done up nice and tidy, ready for the gaping idiots who will come. I just put the barrier in front of you and we're done." He picked up his cleaning cloth and his polish and moved back, and then, very carefully, he put one eye of the red rope into a hook in the wall and went across the place to the other eye in the corresponding hook at the other side, so that no one could approach Grandfather Clock without stepping over or under that red rope barrier. The day moved on as days usually do, and soon there came the roar of motors and the yelling of undisciplined children, accompanied by shrieks from bad-tempered mothers and slaps to try to keep the children in order. The main doors were opened. The footmen stood back, and there was a surge of smelly humanity, reminiscent of a herd of elephants during the period of must, which, of course, is the elephants' mating season, and when they go very wild indeed. The tide of humanity surged into the great hall.
"Mama! Mama! Wanna go? Wanna go?" yelled a small boy.
"Shh!" cautioned the mother. Then suddenly there was a much louder yell from the child.
"Mama! Mama, I gotta go! I gotta go!"
Mama just reached down and gave the boy a sound slap with the fat flat of her hands. For a moment there was silence, and then a strange trickling sound. Sheepishly, the little boy said,
"Mama, I've been..."
And he stood there with dripping trousers and a spreading puddle around him. From the side, one of the footmen, with a resigned sigh, moved forward with a mop and a bucket as if such things were everyday occurrences. From the darkness, beneath a deep, overstuffed sofa, two green eyes peered out with interest. The black and white cat had her favorite station there, beneath that sofa, and almost every day she would watch with fascinated interest. The undisciplined children and the sluttish matrons who thronged into this old house, commenting upon this, ruminating about that, and all the time leaving chocolate papers, cardboard cups, anything on the furniture and on the floor, regardless of the work it caused to others. Grandfather Clock, at the end of the great hall, looked on with an impassive face. He was somewhat disconcerted, though, when another small boy rushed up the hall and was stopped only by that red braided cord stretched across its width. An attendant moved forward quickly and grasped him by the collar just as he was about to duck under the rope. "Get out of here, can't you?" growled the man, turning the boy about and giving him a shove in the back to get him moving. The throng grew thicker, thicker mentally, too. They gazed at the pictures on the wall, mouths wide open, chewing and chewing the great gobs of stuff dangling from rooftop to tongue. It was all strange to them. They could hardly believe that they were having a great privilege in getting a glimpse of the past. All they wanted was a glimpse of next week's paycheck. All things must end, even bad things, although bad things seem to last much longer than do the good things. One has a good experience, and it seems to be over almost before one knows it has started. But a bad experience? Oh, that is something different. It seems to be prolonged. It seems to be dragged out unendingly. But of course, an end to it does eventually come. So it was on this day. As the darkening shadows fell across the windows, the crowds thinned, and there was the roar of many motors as great chartered buses pulled away. Then the mass of people grew thinner still, until there were only two or three, and then one or two, and later none. Thankfully, the cleaning staff moved like a swarm of locusts throughout the building, picking up papers, cartons, popsicle sticks, all the variegated litter which untidy humans want to deposit on any available spot. Outside, in the grounds, much broken glass had to be picked up. Soft drink bottles, cartons, and from under certain well-favored bushes, ladies' underwear could be hooked out. The animals who looked on often wondered how a person could remove certain garments and then be so careless as to not put them on again. But then, of course, the animals wondered why people should have these garments in the first case. They were born without them, weren't they? Still, as the animals said to themselves so frequently, there's absolutely no accounting for the oddity of human misbehavior. At long last, night had fallen, and the lights had been turned on while the family gathered around to assess the day's takings and to balance the day's profits against the day's losses in damage done, plants uprooted, and windows broken, because it was a rare day indeed when some snooty-nosed little lout did not heave a brick through a greenhouse window. Eventually, all the work was done, all the accounting was over. The night security man went around with his flashlight and his time clock booking in to various points in the building at pre-allotted times. The lights were extinguished, and the night watchman one of several, moved down to the communal security office. The black and white cat crept into the great hall through a partly opened window and walked sedately up to Grandfather Clock. "I've just had my supper, Grandfather," she said, licking her lips. "I don't know how you keep going without having any food except a pull on your chains every so often. You must feel hungry. Why don't you come out with me? And we'll chase a bird or two, and I'll catch you a mouse." Grandfather Clock chuckled deep within his throat and said nothing. The time was not yet, for everyone knows that no Grandfather Clock speaks before 12:45, for that is leading up to the witching hour, when all is magic, when the whole world seems different, and when those who are normally voiceless find the wherewithal with which to voice their thoughts. Grandfather Clock, for the time being, could only think and say, as was his wont, "Tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock." Away in what had been a very important lady's retiring room, Granddaughter Clock mused upon the happenings of the day. She was extremely fortunate, she thought, that she was not pushed off her base when two fighting hooligans had tripped over the rope barrier and had fallen right at her feet. Fortunately, two wary attendants seized the men and bundled them unceremoniously out the door, where they were grabbed by outside security people and bounced out of the grounds. Granddaughter Clock thought of it with a shudder of horror, which raised a metallic clatter in her throat. She thought, too, how pleasant it had been in the early morning when the young footman had come to her, attended to her attire, and fed her by raising her weights, and then had very, very carefully adjusted the time, so that now she chimed and struck in exact synchronization with Grandfather Clock. Everything was still, as still as things can be in an ancient house. The clocks went on with their monotonous tick-tock. The traveling clocks said tickety, 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 and longed for the 12:45 so that he could tell of some of his adventures. And the black and white cat looked at the hands of Grandfather Clock and sighed with resignation, thinking that time is not yet. We'll never get the old clock to talk until 12:45. The black and white cat walked across the hall and leaped lithely onto an old chest. There, upon a drape, she stretched out and went to sleep, but not for long. Incidents outside the window kept awakening her, and she had to crouch and make mewing noises as foolish birds came fluttering by the window. "Oh, if only I could open this window," exclaimed the exasperated cat, "I would teach you disturbing birds a lesson or two. Not that you would live to profit by it." The bird saw the black and white shadow inside the room and flew off with squawks of alarm. At last, Grandfather Clock chimed and chimed again and struck the half hour of 11 at night. Granddaughter Clock chimed and struck as well. The traveling clock seemed to go faster with its tickety, 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 and the black and white cat opened one eye, the right one this time, and looked up at the clock face to see if the hands were indeed at 11:30. Tick-tock, 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 went the clocks in unison, and then at last there was the metallic rattle in Grandfather's long case, a metallic rattle, and then the rumble as a chain started to move and a weight descended. It was a quarter to midnight. Grandfather Clock sang out the chimes with gusto. A quarter to midnight, nearly the time when a day dies and a day is born, nearly the time when one cycle turns and becomes the reverse cycle. And now is the time, thought Grandfather Clock, for talk. Grandfather Clock, Grandfather Clock, I begs first talk, said the black and white cat, who had leapt to her feet, jumped to the ground, and raced to a position in front of the well-polished long case. Outside, the moon was shining a little brighter than it had the night before, because it was approaching its full, and this was a quieter night. No storm clouds scudded across the sky. There was no wind to rattle the branches in the trees outside. All was quiet. All was still, and the moon shone brightly inwards. "Well now, young cat," said Grandfather Clock, "so you claim to talk first, eh? Well, it seems to me you have already talked first with what you said. But what do you want to talk about, young cat?" The black and white cat interrupted her toilet and sat up straight and said, "Grandfather Clock, I have been thinking a lot of what you told us last night. I have been thinking of what you said about the pendulum. Now, Grandfather Clock, if good and bad alternate with each swing of the pendulum, then they don't have much of a chance to do good or bad, do they? Because they only get about a second for each swing, or so I understand. How do you account for that, Grandfather Clock?" The black and white cat sat back on her haunches, with tail spread straight out behind her. She was sitting squarely, as though she expected a blast of wrath from Grandfather Clock to upset her balance. But no, Grandfather Clock had the wisdom of old age, and the tolerance of old age, too. He merely cleared his throat again with a metallic tinkle and said, "But, my dear little cat, you do not think that the pendulum of the universe beats at 1 second intervals, do you? It beats over a period of thousands and thousands of years. Time, you know, little cat, is entirely relative. Now, here we are, and it's 11:40 here in England, but in other countries it's a different time, and even if you went to Glasgow instantly, you would find that it wasn't 11:40, but it might be 15 minutes. It's all very mysterious, really. And of course my own figuring is limited to my own particular output of pendulum strokes." Grandfather Clock stopped speaking for a moment while he drew breath in the form of another link of the chain going over the tooth cog inside the case. Then, when the weight had stopped its descent, he spoke again. "You must remember, little cat, that our unit, the unit of us clocks, that is 24 hours. Now, in each hour, there are 60 minutes, and in each minute there are 60 seconds. So that means 3,600 seconds in an hour. So, in 24 hours, a 1 second pendulum beat will have moved 86,400 times. "Whoa," said the cat. "That is a lot of strokes, isn't it? Oh, my, I could never work out a thing like that." And the black and white cat looked at the grandfather clock with renewed admiration. "Yes," said Grandfather Clock, warming to his subject and his pendulum beating even louder, "but the pendulum of the universe has a completely different system because we are dealing with 24-hour periods in our assessment. But we must remember that in the real time beyond this earth, the world goes through a period of 1,728,000 years in each cycle. And all cycles go in groups of four, as does my strike of the hour, the quarter, the half, and the three quarters. So you see, we are following a good tradition. The universe goes in fours, and so do we, striking clocks." The black and white cat nodded wisely as if she understood everything that was being said, as if all this profound knowledge was well within her capacity, and then she said, "But, Grandfather Clock, how about when the pendulum is at the end of its swing? You said it stops for a fraction of a fraction of a second. What about in what you termed the real time?" Grandfather Clock chuckled to himself and said, "Ah, yes, of course. But when we have 1,728,000 years to play with, then we can afford to allow the pendulum to stop at each end of the swing for many years, can't we? But it is all so profound that not many humans can comprehend it, not many clocks can understand it either. We do not want to give you a burst brain, little cat, with all this knowledge, so perhaps we should drop that particular subject." "But, Grandfather Clock, there is one thing I particularly want to ask," said the little black and white cat. "If God is at one side of the swing and Satan at the other, then how do they find time to do any good or any bad?" The glass on the front of Grandfather Clock's face shone brightly in the moonlight, and then, after an instant or two, he answered, "When we have all these years for a swing, then we can afford to have about 2,000 years at the end of each swing, so that at one 2,000-year interval, we have good, and at the next 2,000 years, we have bad. And then the next swing will bring good again, and the swing after that brings bad." "But," said Grandfather Clock hastily, "I must stop. The time has come for Granddaughter Clock and I to strike together the hour of midnight when all nature is free to make a change. When the day dies and a new day is born, and when the pendulum swings, it goes first from good and then to bad, and from bad to good. Excuse me." And Grandfather Clock stopped abruptly in his speech while the wheels within him whirred and the descending weight rumbled, and from Grandfather Clock's long case came the chiming of the hour of midnight, followed by the deep-toned strike of the 12, and then, close by, Granddaughter Clock echoed and faithfully repeated the chime and the strike. On the little table to the side, the traveling clock grumbled to itself and said, "What a windy, garrulous pair they are. They hog all the speaking time for themselves. Huh." End of chapter 8.